A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with David Trahan from the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine about how the Maine session went, some of the inside baseball tactics that were used to advance several gun control bills, including a 72-hour waiting period. In fact, David is crying foul about how that vote went down, and he says he is prepared to bring a legal challenge, or at least present the evidence for a legal challenge to the NRA if Governor Mills does not veto that gun control bill. That is one of several eye-opening revelations from David Trahan. Take a look and a listen. David, thanks so much for coming on the program again. It's good talking with you, sir.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to wait a couple of days for the dust to settle after a sine die. So we just kind of get a lay of the landscape. And I guess, you know, overall, I mean, we still don't know what the governor's going to do with the bills that passed. But in addition to all of her proposals, which included, you know, expanding background checks, you've got the expansion of the yellow flag law, and then the establishment of these mental health crisis centers. What else did lawmakers approve this session that is concerning to you, David?
Sure. Well, I want to step back just a second to explain what happened with the background check expansion. Okay. Our membership year after year opposes universal background checks. What the governor's bill did was it expanded background checks to what I believe is already being done at gun shows, requiring a background check at a gun show, including on the premises. So if a person brings a gun unknown to the show, they try to sell it in the parking lot or bring it in to sell it, they'd have to have a background check at the show. So that was part of the governor's proposal. The second part was if you advertise it to the public, you don't know who your purchaser is, then you would, so like in our Uncle Henry's magazine, you'd have to have a background check. And so that's a pretty limited expansion. Everything else is exempted. So although we gave a little bit of ground on that one, it could have been a lot worse. So anyway, yeah. what did pass, and there's two issues. I'll tell you what passed and then why I am so irritated and frustrated and a little bit angry too with how it was done. That part to me is the real story. The 72-hour waiting period bill, that passed by one vote in the Senate, and I'll get back to that in a minute. That's pending the governor's decision to either allow it to go into law without her signature, sign it, or veto it. And I've had several conversations with the governor since the passage, and I'm feeling pretty decent that she'll be vetoing it.
Really?
Yes. I don't think she had really supported it from any part in the session did she support it. She made it known. I know because I was there when she made it known. So there's a chance that she could veto it. So I'm going to hold judgment. No criticism from me for the governor. And for those that are sending messages, keep them respectful because she's the last line before this goes into law, and it's possible she could veto it. So the second thing that passed was for those firearms that are confiscated by police, game wardens, and others during a crime, the state currently auctions those. Mm-hmm. And I know our State of Maine Sportsman Show, they auctioned some of them. That just happened yesterday. There were 230 guns in that auction. We're one of the partners that put that show on. There's no need to do this. It's symbolic. That bill also has a redefinition of machine gun that unfortunately captures shotguns. Basically, the definition why it captures shotguns is defines it as with one pull of the trigger, multiple projectiles. And anyone that has operated a shotgun knows that there's multiple buckshot, birdshot. Right. And so if that goes into law, we'll immediately submit legislation to redefine it so it doesn't include shotguns or try to repeal it next year. I'm hoping the governor will look at that and try to veto it as well.
Okay.
Tried to, but veto it.
Yeah.
So those two bills are still pending. There's another study related to voluntarily giving up your firearm rights. Representative Dudera has that bill. It passed. She is historically very anti-gun. And during her testimony, said that she wanted our organization on the committee. She never asked me. We will not serve on her committee. I will not serve on her committee. She just wants to take our rights away. And I will offer my seat on the committee to the National Rifle Association, and perhaps they'll take it. But I want nothing to do with taking a person's rights away.
Yeah, well, I got to say, we have that that voluntary, you know, do not sell list in Virginia. I think that it has been rarely used. It's been a while since I've actually seen any stories on it. But I think the last time I saw a story on it was a year after it had passed. And I think there were less than a dozen individuals who had, you know, signed up and said, hey, I don't want, don't sell me a gun if I go into a gun store. To me, that is a step in the wrong direction. It's a bit of a slippery slope argument, right? From, here's a tool for people to use, here's something that you should have to sign up for. Maybe if you're receiving mental health treatment or things of that nature, to me, it just opens the door, to a lot of really, really bad proposals. But I want to go back to something you said a couple minutes ago. You said that there was something about this process that made you angry.
Session. Very much so. For your listeners, I served 12 years in the Maine legislature, 4 terms in the House and 2 in the Senate. And during my time in the legislature, I studied the rules. I knew the rules as well as anybody, because knowing the rules gives you power. Most of the people there do not know the rules very well, and it helps you be a more effective legislator to know the rules. Well, I was sitting in the Senate when the 72-hour waiting period bill was being debated, and I knew immediately when I heard the Senate president say that they would be pairing votes to pay attention, that pairing of votes can be used to take a bill that fails passage and using people not in the chamber manipulate the votes. And I'll explain to you how they did it.
Okay.
There were 33 people in the chamber, 2 people missing. The vote was 17-16. The motion was ought to pass. The 17 were the no's. So the bill failed for those that were in attendance. 2 of the individuals, Senator Baldacci and Senator Rennie, then announced that they were pairing their votes. They were no votes. Excuse me. They paired their votes with 2 other legislators who weren't there. Now, there's a reason they did that. They're both Democrats, and they were both in tough swing districts. They could then tell their constituents they voted no on the bill, and then their votes are then not counted when they're paired. So in other words, those 2 red votes were then taken off of the count, which then made it 16-15, and it passed. So what happens is the two people, the ones that are not in attendance,
yeah,
the 2 that are in attendance, neutralize each other's votes. That then manipulated the numbers down to 16-15. And I documented it all because I knew that in order to pull that off, first of all, it's disingenuous for those 2 senators in attendance.
Yeah, right.
If you're opposed and you know your pairing is going to change the vote tally, if you're really opposed to the bill, wouldn't you be opposed to the bill?
Sure.
You know your actions are going to lead to it passing. So you get to have it both ways.
Right.
You tell your constituents I opposed it. But, oh, yeah, by the way, I forgot to tell you, I let my vote be discounted.
Yeah.
Which then allowed it to pass. Well, I took photographs of the vote. I retained the information, and I immediately went to the Republican leadership, their attorney, their parliamentarian, and said, you need to challenge this because I know that there's very significant, first of all, paperwork that's required. You have to have written permission from the president. You have to have written requests from all the legislators. And I said, I want to see that documentation because I don't think they have it. And that was last week, and we still have not received the paperwork. So I'm going to ask again this week for the information for all that paperwork. If I do not receive it, I'll be making a call to the NRA lawyers explaining how the rule works. The fact that they refuse to supply the information and ask them if they'll do a legal challenge on the passage of that legislation.
Wow. That is some shady stuff. And I know there are all kinds of parliamentary rules and tricks. As you say, knowing those rules does give you power, right? If you know how the system operates, then you can, I don't want to say game the system, but you can use it to your advantage. But you also get to acknowledge when the rules aren't followed, right? And that gives you power in its own right. And it sounds like that's what we're talking about here. They were playing a little fast and loose with the rules.
Yes, that's right. And it was late at night on the last day of the session. People thought they could get away with it. There was also another pairing with one of the same senators on an earlier vote. You have to have that literature on every single vote that you do it.
Okay.
I doubt that they would have done it on both pairings. So in other words, 2 days prior, mm-hmm. he paired his vote. He was absent. They would have had to have the literature then, and then they would have to have it a second time when the final enactment came up. And if you had the paperwork and it had been requested by four different entities, including myself, wouldn't you have supplied it by now? So I'm suspicious whether they have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because all right, this can become a scandal. This
absolutely.
Can become a scandal. Yeah. So I'm going to follow up on that. I'm really irritated with the Senate President, Troy Jackson. Troy Jackson is an Allagash boy. I've served with him 20 years ago in the House. He used the NRA endorsement and grades to get to where he is today. He used the SAM grades to get to where he is today. He was always pro-Second Amendment. And then this session, he's termed out. He wants to run as a candidate in the governor race, wants to get through a primary, in a Democrat primary. And he turned on us. And he supported this gun control legislation. That's frustrating, because last year I gave him an award for legislative service for being consistently a pro-Second Amendment candidate. And he is the one that helped orchestrate the pairing of votes and supported this legislation as it moved forward. It would never have gotten to where it was without the president of the Senate's support.
Yeah. Has he stated any reason for his change of heart? Or is he still pulling the I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment but card?
No, he's not saying that anymore, because I won't let him get away with it. But the I think the reasoning that he used was that, and this part didn't make any sense, that as hunters, people who hunt, we got to get on board with some gun regulation, some gun control. And that was an excuse to switch his positions. The answer to that statement for me is we're law-abiding people, that hunters, we use firearms, but that's not why we have a Second Amendment, is to go hunting.
Right.
We have a Second Amendment to defend your family from the government, from foreign and domestic individuals that want to hurt you. We don't have guns to go bird hunting. We have guns to protect our families and protect ourselves from the government when they go too far.
Absolutely.
And so for me, that was offensive as well. And it shows me that he doesn't understand the Second Amendment, or if he does understand it, he had a really lame reason for changing his votes.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about a couple of the dogs that didn't bark this session, David, because I know going in, yeah, there was talk about a gun ban. There was talk about a magazine ban. Were those bills formally introduced this session?
No. Well, the red flag bill was.
Yeah.
It was a late introduction by the speaker. The governor and I have worked on the yellow flag law for years. There were some changes made to it. I'm not really concerned about those. They were mostly around the amount of time that you have to do different procedures. So that wasn't as big a deal. The red flag bill was horrible. It allowed somebody to red flag you with an email. You could email your red flag order to the court. It was even worse than the national red flag legislation. There's all kinds of problems with it. So that stayed in committee. The governor made it clear. I know I was talking with the governor nearly every week. I was every week, almost every day. And she was indicating a veto right from the get-go. So the Speaker of the House wanted to be able to trumpet and triumph, you know, in the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Bring all of her followers, her troops to the public hearing, get all that good publicity, raise some money, and then let it die in committee. They said that there wasn't enough time. There was always enough time.
Right.
She didn't want to be embarrassed with a defeat when she was in power. Call it what it is. She's also the governor. So that was just one of her signature trophies for political purposes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The so-called assault weapons ban, magazine capacity, governor made it clear she didn't want that out there either. So it wouldn't have gone anywhere. I don't even think it would have got through legislative council as a late bill. So the governor really dictated what was going to be on the agenda. And she made it clear that she was going to support her own bill and that everything else would be risky business for those putting the legislation in. I'll just leave it that way.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that I'm right. I'm hoping that she's going to veto these other bills. But she did not want those more aggressive bills. And part of the reason is, Cam, I'm going to be frank with your listeners and those. I don't know any other way to say it. When the governor took office, I said, Governor, I worked on 12 referendums, of which most of those were people's vetoes. If the legislature goes too far with this, I will organize a people's veto. And I said, I'm not threatening you. I'm just telling you what I will do.
Yeah.
And my followers at SAM, the NRA, Gun Owners of Maine, Women for Gun Rights, we're activists. We're grassroots activists, and we can deliver. When you put all those groups together, we can effectively do a people's veto. And I made it clear that if they go too far, we will. And I think that's a good deterrent. I've been critical of the referendum process in the past because out-of-state groups use it to influence us.
Right.
But in this case, it is a very effective tool to keep them at bay.
Well, and it does seem to me, I mean, listen, I'm following, you know, the news from Virginia, so I'm not on the ground. But it does seem to me that there was a lot of grassroots opposition to these gun control proposals. You know, even in Lewiston, the city council, I think the vote was 4-3 in favor of a resolution backing the governor's gun control proposals. Right. So even that was contentious. And you had, you know, you had folks who lost family members, who lost loved ones, who said, listen, these bills would not have stopped this attack. This is not the way to go. We need to improve mental health access. We need to improve these other things, but quit blaming my right to keep and bear arms for this crime.
Yes.
Correct. So I'm curious, you know, what, tell me about the grassroots response. Were gun owners contacting their lawmakers? Were they engaged this session?
Yes.
And how does that compare to sessions past?
Well, they were very engaged, but they were also gagged.
Yeah.
You know, the legislature has this process by which they're supposed to have public hearings. They're supposed to let the public have an opportunity to speak.
Right.
For the first time in Maine history, we were limited to testifying on all the bills before the committee in 2 minutes. So you had 2 minutes to testify on whatever bills were before the committee. I couldn't even give my name, organization, and title of the bill in the time they allowed us to testify. At the same time, the parking garage is where the public parks was closed. And I did follow up with security to find out why. My brother works in security at State House, and I was told that it structurally wasn't safe for people to park there. Well, it's 4 tiers of parking for the public that no longer existed. You had to park a quarter of a mile from the building, yet the legislators, their staff, everyone working in the building had reserved parking all around the building. So all of the parking was for those bureaucrats in the building and legislators, and the public had to find or figure out a way to get into the building. When these bills were taken up, the supporters were allowed to speak for, and this is usually the way it works. Each side would have a half an hour and then switch. Didn't work that way this time. This time, the supporters of the bills were allowed to go on for hours while the opposition sat there. And that was done for a reason. The reporters go home at 5 o'clock. All they got to hear were the supporters. And these poor people that had traveled for hours to get there would sit there for hours, finally get tired and go home. I have never seen such an ice cold blanket of water put on the public as I've seen this year. In the legislature, the Speaker of the House, and she thought maybe she was clever the way she was doing it, when she would run bills and not get the votes she wanted, she would get on the phone. I watched her on camera. I knew what was going on because I served there. She would have their leadership take people out into her office, put them on the phone, and she would twist their arm to change the vote. She would tell legislators to take a walk if you're not going to vote the right way. So you'd see people leaving the chamber and watch the numbers go from opposing it to supporting it. The Speaker of the House, Talbot Ross, manipulated the votes. And I'm just going to say this because it's the truth. The Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate are supposed to establish decorum and maintain the integrity of the institution. Is it voter intimidation to tell people to change their vote or lose a committee assignment? Is it voter suppression to tell people to leave the chamber and not vote? Is it voter suppression to have them on the phone and browbeat them until they're crying to come in and switch their vote? If the Democrat Party truly believes in every vote counts, they believe in voter integrity, they believe in the process, then they just show it in the place where we make our laws. And they didn't. It was shameful. As a former legislator myself, I'm embarrassed to see it. I'm embarrassed to see how they treated the public. It's not just on the gun bills. What the Speaker of the House did and the Senate President is they established a new bottom of the barrel precedent for how you treat our voting process. And I will, that's not going to get me any points with them, but I'm not looking for points.
Sure.
What good is the lawmaking process if it doesn't listen to the very people it's supposed to represent? Whether you like it or not, whether you're Speaker or the Senate President, once all of this entire process is done and the people have spoken, you should respect that system. And where the votes fall, they fall. And that didn't happen here.
You think there's going to be a backlash come November when the voters of Maine have a chance to respond?
I think there is already a voter. What would you want to call it? Not a revolt. But I'll tell you, there's some angry people. I did a post explaining how the Senate President had paired the votes and how deceitful that was. I've had some posts get a lot of exposure. That one got more than anyone. People were stopping me in the stores, thanking me for writing that, getting the truth out. I was at the State of Maine Sportsman Show. I bet I had 150 people mention that and how refreshing it is to hear the truth and how disgusted they were. There's one thing about me that people, once they get to know me, will recognize is that when I believe something is wrong, there's no way to shut me up. You can fire me, you can take whatever shots you want, but it's not going to shut me up. I'm going to tell the truth about what happened. I'm going to write about it. I'm going to put it in our newsletter. And in the next election, the candidates are going to have to answer more questions about how they treat the voting process. I am going to submit changes to the rules to stop it from happening. And I'm going to introduce legislation to strip out the clever little things they stuck in those bills if they do get signed into law. So I can do that. That's my part. We're all patriots. Each of us has a small part in that process. Mine is an important component of that, and I understand it, and I'm going to follow through on it. This is our country. This is our state. And when a few people get to silence the voice of the majority and manipulate that system, it is no longer our system. It belongs to a few in power. And that message is very strong no matter what party you're from.
Yeah.
You want people, most people want you to play by the rules. And why this is important, we had an abortion bill the most extreme in the nation that got passed disingenuously, the way I described it. Why this is important to your listeners, it's an important distinction. Right now, there's almost a supermajority of Democrats in both chambers and a Democrat governor. When that bill, the extreme bill, could not get the votes it needed to pass, they manipulated the votes. It wasn't the Republicans who said they wanted to take away reproductive rights, as the other side likes to say. It was Democrats fighting Democrats, because they already had the votes. If that was their party agenda, they already had it passed with Democrat votes. They were fighting themselves, because in some of those moderate Democrat districts, they didn't support the extreme bill. That means that when they twisted their arms and got the votes finally, they got them to change their votes or take a walk, it wasn't the majority of Maine people's position.
Right.
Our system, you elect a representative and a senator, and when they go to Augusta, they're supposed to represent the interests of the community. When a few in leadership can change those positions, you go from representing the majority to representing the minority. And that's a message that Republicans need to take on the campaign trail, is that it's no longer representation of the majority. It's representation of out-of-state groups with deep pockets and a few people in leadership representing Portland, Maine. And Absolutely. That's not good for any republic.
Well, you got that right. David, listen, man, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the program today, as well as all of your activism. Let's follow up again. How long does the governor have to decide? 10 days.
10 days. This will be decided within the next week.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get you back on the program when we know what Governor Mills is doing. In the meantime, sounds like your message to gun owners right now, still contact the governor, encourage her to veto these bills.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. All right. David Trahan with the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. Thank you so much for your time today, sir. Look forward to doing this again soon.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate David joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very soon. Sounds like I'm not an attorney, but I'm not a parliamentarian expert like David is. But boy, it does sound like there is an opening there to challenge that waiting period bill, if in fact it becomes law. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred: free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment does not think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Now let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a tragic and infuriating story from Arkansas, West Helena, Arkansas, where a teenager was shot and killed in a post-prom party in West Helena. Suspect in custody. The Arkansas State Police Criminal Investigation Division spent most of Sunday morning, according to the Magnolia Reporter, trying to locate Dontaria Stevens, a 19-year-old from Helena, Arkansas, a previous graduate. He was booked into the Phillips County Jail Sunday afternoon. He is expected to be charged with first-degree murder as well as possession of firearms by certain persons. He is accused, or at least suspected, of killing Lorenzo Harrison III, a senior at West Helena Central High School, who was killed in this shooting about 1 o'clock Sunday morning. Incident occurred after the prom at a after party attended by students across the street from Otter Warehouse in West Helena. According to court records, Stevens, again, the suspected in this murder, was arrested in June of 2022, so less than 2 years ago, on charges of aggravated robbery and battery in the first degree. But he took a plea deal. Prosecutors dropped the aggravated robbery charge, and he ended up entering a negotiated plea of guilty to the count of battery. He received 120 months of probation in January of this year for the battery offense. He was ordered to pay a $1,000 fine and $235 in court costs and fees. The court order noted that Stephen's sentence was a downward departure from sentencing guidelines due to, quote, evidentiary issues. Now, the court didn't explain what those evidentiary issues might be. So maybe prosecutors felt like this was the best that they could get. But given the fact that somebody who was handed probation 4 months ago is now getting ready to be charged with murder, I think it's time for prosecutors and police to come clean about what those evidentiary issues were that led to this plea deal, that led to young Mr. Stevens here being sentenced to probation rather than prison for the original charge of aggravated robbery and first-degree battery. Today's Armed Citizen story from the Nashville, Tennessee area, where a suspected burglar is in the hospital and is expected to face charges once he is released after being shot by a homeowner over the weekend. According to authorities in the Nashville Police Department, 32-year-old Anton Cosby, accused of breaking into a home along Shreve Lane in Nashville just before 6 o'clock Saturday morning. Homeowner's family apparently woke up to the sound of banging on the front door and then the windows. Not a usual sound at 6 o'clock in the morning. So the homeowner grabbed his firearm. And that's when he discovered Cosby actually in the home. He had, according to authorities, broken through the kitchen window and started to climb through when the homeowner saw him, said, "Hey, get out." He didn't. And that's when the homeowner fired a shot, hitting Cosby in the arm. And at that point, Cosby allegedly dropped a revolver that he was holding. That landed near the kitchen sink, and then Cosby ran off. Police said they found him nearby, but when they tried to render aid, he became combative, taken to a local hospital where he's being treated for a non-critical gunshot wound. According to officials, the district attorney's office has already determined the homeowner was acting in self-defense, so he's not expected to face any charges here. But once Cosby is released from the hospital, authorities say he'll be charged with aggravated burglary, felony vandalism, possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony, and possession of a firearm while intoxicated. We'll try to keep our eyes on that story and read more details as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. This is not a repeat from last week. I know we talked about a Good Samaritan in Colorado last week. It happened again. Different road, different victim, different Good Samaritan. But a woman from Lakewood, Colorado, saved by a Good Samaritan after she was in a single car accident and spent several hours trapped underneath her pickup truck, suffering some serious injuries in the meantime. This was last Tuesday, about 2:30 in the morning. Rachel Hammock was driving home from work. Truck she's driving veered off the road, ended up rolling multiple times, and came to rest in a field next to the Fox Hollow Golf Course, about 100 yards off the road, and it was actually not visible from the street. So later that morning, Steve Abraham, who's a superintendent of the golf course, is out making his rounds, and he came across the truck. He approached the vehicle. He saw Hammock pinned underneath. Her legs were trapped. Her body was stuck in a barbed wire fence. Abraham says, "I was getting the barbed wire kind of away from her body. I had to cut her hair out because she was stuck in there." He alerted his coworkers. Several of them were assisting the woman while they waited for first responders to arrive. When they did show up, they took Rachel Hammock to a local hospital. She was placed in a medically induced coma. Stephen Abraham says they got her out in about 7 minutes, but because nobody noticed her, she was stuck there for about 4 hours. Hammock's boyfriend, Eben Jones, found out about the crash the next day. He notified her parents, Sam and Thomas Hammock, who live in South Carolina. They flew to Denver to be by their daughter's side. Sam Hammock says, "All I could think of is I need to get to my girl." Last Friday, according to Denver 7, Rachel Hammock underwent surgery, suffered a broken pelvis, a broken nose, fractured vertebrae, large laceration on her head. She, at last report, still in and out of consciousness, but she is expected to recover. Her boyfriend says, I know she's strong and she'll come through. So I'm just trying my best to stay positive. Again, this could have easily been a fatal car accident were it not for the random encounter and the fact that Steve Abraham stumbled upon this wreck when he did. And again, took the steps to immediately render aid, including calling 911, making sure that, you know, there were first responders who were on the way. And thankfully, Rachel Hammack is alive today because of Steve Abraham and those good Samaritans there at the Fox Hollow Golf Course in Lakewood, Colorado. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is all the time we've got for you in this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company, but I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I would encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including the Supreme Court granting cert to Vanderstock versus Garland. This is the challenge to the ATF's rule on unfinished frames and receivers. Oral arguments will take place in the fall. We've got that story and a whole lot more at BearingArms.com. Be sure to check it out. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. In the meantime, be well, be safe, and be free.